welcome back to moving to hybrid cloud with Microsoft Azure. Hope you had a good break. We do want to make sure that you take a chance and some time to answer the polls. So if you haven't done so, please do so now. And we are going to move on to storage. As we go through this storage, we're going to look at the persistent cloud storage and the base of the private cloud. We're going to look at, you know, the durable storage. We're going to look at different storage scenarios of when would I use this storage. So that is our plan for the next half hour. Persistent cloud storage. In Microsoft Azure Storage, we have over 4 trillion objects in there today. And these objects that we're accessing, you're accessing, is about 270 requests per second on average, what we're running.
And 270,000?
270,000.
Wow, jeez.
So it's a lot of transactions, a lot of action against this data. And as we look, it peaks up to what we're seeing in production is 880,000 requests per second. And Azure handles this just fine. So lots of objects, and we hope to have this increased by another 4 trillion. So please help us out and put some more objects in Azure Storage for us. As we look at storing data in Azure Storage, how does it work? The initial thing that we do is we store this data on 3 disks in a mirrored fashion. So the data is all mirrored. When we store these on disk, they are in different environments, different cabinets, so that if we lose a section, you don't lose that disk. They're on different disks. We've worked in this industry for a while, so we kind of understand that when you get a pallet full of disks, those disks often fail at the same time. So we multi-source those disks that get fill up those cabinets. And so that they don't all end up dying on the same day. But the nice thing about those drives is it is on 3 disks. If it does die on a disk, the storage is durable. So let's say I have a disk that fails. What happens? Azure immediately sees that disk has failed, marks it bad, and makes a copy on another disk. And so I continually will have 3 copies at a local site. But we do more beyond that. We do geographical redundant storage. So what we're going to do in storage is we're going to take another data center that is at least 400 miles away, and then we're going to make another copy there with another 3 copies. So we'll have a total of 6 copies with geographical redundant storage. Why do we do 400 miles away? You may ask that. The reason is if there's some type of natural catastrophe, we don't want it taking out, you know, a flood that comes into the city or some type of earthquake that makes that fall into the ocean or whatever it might be. We don't want a disaster to take out both data centers. And so by putting them 400 miles away, we hope to avert that. And if it does still happen, I think we've got bigger problems in the world. So that is one of our aspects of high availability is that geographical replicated storage. It is your choice when you create that storage of whether or not you're going to do locally redundant storage at just one site or geographical redundant. Or we have another new feature that's currently in preview where the storage is redundant, but it's going to be at a data center that's closer than the 400 miles away. So provisioning this storage, when we think about storage, it's really important because it's the base of what we're doing here. And Keith is going to take us through and show us how to provision storage in Azure, provision a storage space. With that, I'll hand it over to you, Keith.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, so provisioning cloud storage in Azure is provisioned through the Azure portal, much like other resources that Brian showed earlier this morning. So when we look at the Azure portal, what we'll do to provision new storage or see our existing storage accounts is drill down on our left navigation pane to the storage tab. I'll go ahead and click on that storage tab. You'll see all of the existing storage accounts that I previously have provisioned in my Azure subscription. So each of these storage accounts you can think of as thin provisioned or sparse provisioned storage accounts. They start off at 0 bytes in size, and as you write more data into those storage accounts, they grow to accommodate that data. They can grow up to 200 terabytes of usable storage per storage account. And by default, you can create up to 20 storage accounts per Azure subscription, giving you the ability to store up to 4 petabytes of storage as cloud-based storage in a single Azure subscription. Now, if you need more than 4 petabytes, first, please invite me over to your data center. I'd like to take a look at your data center architecture and admire how you're architecting all of your data today. But you do have some options. You can make a support request to our Azure support team to increase the number of storage accounts per subscription. Or alternatively, you can create multiple subscriptions and divide your storage accounts across them. In fact, a lot of our enterprise customers will set up multiple subscriptions. You'll see them all listed up in your subscriptions tab in the Azure portal. And they'll align those subscriptions to different business units or application owners or development teams within their organization. Since billing charges for storage, networking, and virtual machines all accrue at a subscription level, it allows you to have a very convenient model for being able to perform chargeback or showback within an organization. Now, when I'm ready to create a new storage account, on my storage page, I'll just go down to my New button located on the bottom toolbar. I'll click New. Because I'm on the storage page, it will automatically default to creating a new storage account. And with just a few fields of information, I can quickly set up a new storage account. So I'll create a storage account for our demo today. Call it KDemo Store 01. And it'll tell me, hey, that's a great name. It matches our requirements for naming. It'll ask me, where in the world do I want this storage account to be provisioned? And just like we saw earlier this morning with virtual machines, we can choose any of our available Azure data center regions as locations. So Brian and I today are over on the West US, so I'll go ahead and choose our West US region. And then for replication or redundancy options, we have three choices. We've got locally redundant, which tracks back to having three synchronous copies of every block of data within the Azure data center region, in this case the West US region, that we're provisioning our resources inside. If we want to take advantage of that geo-replication feature that Brian referenced, though, we can also select geo-redundant. Geo-redundant gives us the ability to have that asynchronous geo-replication between Azure data center regions taking place so that we have three local copies that are synchronously written and another three copies that are asynchronously streamed for additional geographic recovery protection. One third option that we have as a new option is read access geo-redundant storage. That third option allows us to take advantage of the geo-redundant storage between Azure data center regions, but also gain read access to our replicated storage copy over at the remote Azure data center region. So that if we're looking to read that data as part of our, perhaps part of our disaster recovery planning test scenarios, or read that data from an application in that remote data center region that's doing reporting off that data where it may only need read access, that becomes a great option. Now keep in mind that there's different price points for locally redundant, geo-redundant, and read access geo-redundancy. You can check out the Azure pricing calculator for the details on each of the pricing that applies to each of these redundancy options. Now, in my case, I'm going to select geo-redundant because I want to make sure that the storage that I'm putting in place on Azure is not only redundant within my local data center region, but I get that extra protection. I'm ultimately going to be building some virtual machines later on in our Jumpstart course that have their virtual hard disks in this storage, and I want to take advantage of geo-redundancy, geo-replication, as a built-in site-to-site redundancy between my Azure data center regions. So, got three fields of information and a quick click to create my new storage account. I'll go ahead and click that, and you'll see that my new storage account is automatically being provisioned. It takes a couple minutes to set up my new storage account. So, while that storage account is in the process of creating, let me just drill quickly into the properties of an existing storage account. So, I'm just going to click on one of my other storage accounts, and I'm going to drill over to my Configure tab. Now on the Configure tab, you'll see that we can change back and forth between the various replication options, locally redundant, geo-redundant, and read access geo-redundant. It'll also allow you to confirm which data center region your Azure storage account is replicating to. So you can see that this is actually replicating, this storage account's replicating to the West US region. In fact, if we go over to our dashboard page, we'll be able to scroll down and see that our primary region is East US. So I'll go ahead and zoom in on that. And our secondary region is West US. That's the region, the secondary region is the region that we're replicating to. So we can change all of that just by drilling into our Configure tab. Under Containers, we have the ability to browse the structure of our storage account for storing what we call blobs of information, binary large objects. Those blobs could be files, they could be other data that's in a file type format, could be virtual hard disks for virtual machines. The containers look very much like a folder structure, and we can navigate into our containers and see if there's any blobs within them. That particular container has no blobs. If we drill back and go into our second container, we'll see that this one has a variety of virtual hard disks that are associated there. We can download those virtual hard disk files. Remember, Brian, a little earlier today talked about VM portability between Azure and on-premises. You have the same virtual hard disk format that Hyper-V uses on-premises that's used by Azure. You can download those virtual hard disks if you wish to transfer them, move those virtual machine hard disks back on premises. And if we go back to our Containers tab, we also have the ability to add our own additional containers for organizing the blobs that we're storing there. Well, now that we've been talking a little bit, let's browse back to our Storage tab, and you'll see that the new storage account that we've just provisioned is now in an online state, ready for us to begin writing data into it. So Brian, let's talk a little bit about the different scenarios that we have for leveraging this new storage account.
Great. Thanks for showing us that, Keith. So accessing blob storage, let's first talk about what blobs are and what we're storing there. As you see on the right side of this page, there's a page and there's blocks. So if I do a page blob can be up to 1 terabyte in size. And the page blobs are what we want to use for VMs. The VHD files that we upload, you'd want them to be a page blob. You don't want to make the mistake that I've made in the past, which is upload it as a block blob, which is our other format we can upload as. A block blob is for videos. And if you upload a VHD file as a block blob, it won't work as far as a VHD and for running VMs. So you do want to be careful of what you are uploading it as. On the other side, which I haven't done, is upload a video as a page blob, which would make it so that I would have to download that whole video before I could play it. Because one of the nice things of Azure Storage is I can play a video up there if I've uploaded as a block blob, and I can start to pick up the video from the middle, and it basically will use it chunks them into 4 megabyte blocks, and it will skip forward to the point of where, in a 4 megabyte chunk, where it can start to stream that video from that piece. So it's a very nice storage area for videos. It's also a nice storage area for anything you want to do. You can put up anything in there. And in the page blob size, the current limit is 1 terabyte in size. For the block blob or for videos, it's actually the current size limit is 200 gigabytes. 200 gigabytes is the largest video you can put up there right now. It's a pretty good size video. But from the page size or the VHD files, the top size is 1 terabyte. So currently in Azure, we support VHD files, and VHDX files are not supported for our virtual machines. And currently, the max size is 1 terabyte. So those are some of the constraints as I build out a VM on-premises that I have to think about if I want to run them up in Azure. Because on-premises, I can make a VHD virtual machine with a 2 terabyte disk size right now and a 64 terabyte VHD size. Those can't be uploaded right now into Azure because of the file size limit. You've got to keep it at 1 terabyte.
Yep. Anyway. And I see a good question in the question queue that's asking, in addition to uploading videos or VHDs, can we upload other files to blob storage as well? And you certainly can. You can upload literally any type of file as a block blob into blob storage. And I see a lot of customers taking advantage of blob storage for offloading the storage capacity and network capacity of perhaps an on-premises website. A lot of customers have websites that have not just web page information, but large PDF files, large video files or whatnot that they wish their customers to download. One easy option for eliminating the storage and network traffic associated with downloading those large files from on-premises is to have them stored up in block storage and simply change your website to redirect the links up to the Azure storage location for downloading all that content. Really easy way of beginning to leverage storage as part of your hybrid cloud strategy with existing web applications. Great question.
That is a great question. And it fits right into what we're talking about here, because when we look at accessing that these files as you put them up there, let's say I want to download these files, I can hit them with a web browser. As we see in the top of the PowerPoint, HTTPS, whack, your account name. So whatever your storage name that you've created is, everybody's got a unique name, .blob.core.windows.net, and then it's your folders, and then it's the actual file name. Now, does this mean anybody has access to your files? And no one has access to your files by default. By default, it's a completely secure environment, and no one has access to this but you when you're authenticated. However, you can go and turn on the ability to access this by anyone. And so if I change the permissions on a file or on a folder, then I can start to use those inside the web pages and have full ability to put the images or the large videos or the you may have large JPEGs or you may have PDF files, Word docs that you want to people to download. You can just put those into a folder here and then have those links on your website, which people can download from.
Yep. And in fact, I use that all the time on my own blog site, my own website and whatnot.
What is that URL?
It's IT Pro Content. Yeah. So if we look out back to the Azure portal, over on that storage page, you'll notice that I've got my own storage account inside my subscription called IT Pro Content. And as I drill into that and go over to the containers tab of this storage account, you'll see all these various resource containers. And when I select one of those containers, you'll notice that when I click on edit down on the bottom, it brings up a edit box that gives me an access field. And this is the access field that Brian was talking about a little earlier. So I actually have these set as public container so that any anonymous user has read access into the contents of this container just by entering the URL path. The default, as Brian had mentioned, is private, meaning that the containers are secured to only the resources that are running inside your subscription or the resources that can authenticate to your storage account. So a great way of being able to leverage storage accounts for offloading a lot of that heavy-duty traffic that might be coming into your on-premises websites.
That's a perfect way to do that. And the thing is, with all your data that you put up here, if you want to download any of it, if you create a VM up in Azure and you want to pull that VM down and run it locally on-premises, all you have to do is hit it with a web browser and pull down that VHD file. There's other ways to access as well. We have an API set if you're developing. The development tools have access to this. There's the ability to use third-party tools or open source tools that are out there that you can get a Explorer-type interface to drag and drop files between your local hard drive and your Azure storage spaces. So the access of your data is very simple in putting data in and pulling data out.
Yep, and don't forget about PowerShell. We've got Add Azure VHD and Save Azure VHD for uploading and downloading VHD disks to and from our Azure storage account.
So now moving on to cloud storage scenarios, we're going to look at basically the hybrid cloud storage scenarios and what we can use this storage as. It's a great environment for doing things such as backup. And if we look at storage is the base of anybody's environment in the cloud, anybody's cloud service. You have to store data. And so storage becomes very important. We spend a lot of time designing this cloud storage because it is the base of our infrastructure as a service. It's the base of our platform as a service. It's the base of our software as a service. And some people use it just for storage. They don't even use any of those environments, just using it for storage for a backup type scenario. So if we look at other workloads we can do within here, one of the tools that we've purchased is Microsoft Store Simple Hybrid Cloud Storage. And what this is an appliance. This appliance you would put in your network, because as companies move to being 100% cloud-based, the problem becomes there's sometimes that you need better access. Maybe you have too many customers on-premises accessing the server scenarios, and your bandwidth is not going to handle that load. Or there are other reasons why you might want local storage. If I'm going to share a file with you and it's going to be a 10 gig VHD file, we probably want to copy that to a local server as opposed to copying it up to the cloud and then downloading it back down again. On my network links, unfortunately, that takes a long time. Putting an appliance like this helps quite a bit. So the other thing we see is in enterprise environments, on average, it's 15 to 30%, depending on the reports you look at, of your data is accessed often. Most of your data is going to be cold data that isn't used. So the other nice thing about the Store Simple appliance, what we have here is an appliance I can put in my environment. I can put large files on it to share locally. I can have that storage that I'm working on shared locally without hitting the WAN link. And then it will back it up as well off the WAN link. So it front ends my cloud storage where I have everything stored. And then only the stuff that we are actively using might be stored on that local appliance. These Store Simple appliances use SSD drives, so they're very fast. And they keep that hotly used and wanted storage that you're accessing, whether it's a Word doc, a PowerPoint, whatever it might be. It keeps it local so that it's fast in here, as well as syncing it as the changes are made back up to the cloud. So you always have that backup saved up to the cloud. But you have that local access speeds. So it's a great appliance that is for that type of environment. I can further store things such as my ISO images. I can use it as a target for my my images or for my cluster. If I build up a cluster of Hyper-V servers or regular Hyper-V boxes, I can do iSCSI to this. So it's a nice place for having that local server. And all that data is automatically backed up then to the Azure Cloud Storage. So if you think about it, that data that grows, it grows exponentially. And we never delete that stuff for the most part, right? Our data keeps growing and growing. The statistics on how much data we have today and how much we're going to have in a few years, we're always looking just to the last few years for the majority of our data because we keep creating so much. So as far as the storage that we need on site, it's really only the hot storage. And this is a perfect appliance to use as a file server, a NAS, an NFS share to keep that type of data. Lastly, one of the nice things about doing a storage appliance like this is we can do cloud snapshots, where we're basically taking point-in-time copies of our data and just storing that snapshot up in the cloud, which allows us to do a very quick backup, where we're only sending the delta of changes. This might be helpful for getting hit with a virus that would go and maybe encrypt all of your files, as many customers I've talked to lately have gotten hit by, where my files get encrypted, and then I get a note that says, hey, if you give us, $400 or something they asked for, I'll give you the unencryption key. Most customers are going back to backups. A lot of customers I've talked to have gone and used their volume shadow copies to restore from that. The hackers have gotten wise to that and have now been starting to, after they encrypt your data, they delete your volume shadow copy snapshots. So you have to go to tape backup or an environment like this where I can bring that cloud snapshot back and get my files back. Or you pay $400. highly recommend if anybody does get hit by some something like that, that you do call your local FBI unit and go after them. But I digress. So this is a great way to provide that redundancy and backup. Another piece is we do have inside Azure a backup scenario. So Microsoft Azure Backup. It works really well for your remote offices and for small environments where you've got a few servers. This is not an enterprise-type backup solution, but it is a great server backup solution. One of the things I look at for cloud backup is fantastic for is to store your data. I previously had done a Windows home server at my environment, and I had a disk fail, put it in a new disk, it rebuilt it. That was great. And then I had disk zero fail. And in Windows Home Server, disk zero is a special disk, and the whole system was kind of screwed up, and I had to recover the data by copying all the files. It was a bit of a mess. That led me to go research what I needed to do for backup in the future. And so I went to where everybody goes for information today. I went to Wikipedia. At least I know the answers are correct. So in Wikipedia, they said that the hard drives are designed only to last 7 years. I've talked to others and gotten the real facts on this, and it is 5 to 7 years you expect a hard drive to last. And so I thought, well, at least I had some of my stuff stored to the recordable CD-ROM drives. Would you care to take a guess at what those last?
10 years.
CD-ROMs are 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Blu-ray writable discs are 10 years, unless you get the backup ones. They call them Blu-ray DVD Golds. Those are made to last 100 years. Hmm. So those ones could work for backup. I started thinking, do I want to do DLT tapes or something like that? And the issue there becomes, I can buy that drive today, and then I store that backup tape, and I have it sitting there, and in 5, 10 years from now, when I want that, if that drive doesn't work, I probably can't go buy that drive. So for my scenario, cloud storage. Wait, I can upload it to someone else. They can switch out those hard drives and worry about all that for me. And all I have to pay is that, I think today it's 9.5 cents per gigabyte. That number keeps changing on us. They may have lowered it again. Hmm. So it's a fantastic way to do backup storage. How we have it built up in Azure, this is actually a different price point because of the Azure tools involved in this. But what we do is you sign up for your Azure account, you sign up for your Windows backup in Azure. That lists an agent. I install that agent to my local machine. I then register and configure that with Azure. I have to do a certificate between Azure and my machine, the same way I do for many of my solutions, whether it's PowerShell or whether it's the tools that we use with the app deployment. We basically have to set up those certificates for that protected connection. Once that's set up, my server can then back up my files to Azure's storage. When I have a failure, I can restore that storage on down, either per file, or I could restore the entire server if I've lost the entire server. And the only time that I would have to worry about bringing that down, I need that certificate to do that talk with that new server. But otherwise, that certificate's already in the server. So restoring files, deleting files or restoring files that have been deleted by your end users is a very simple task and doesn't take any other use than going in and selecting the file and from what backup you want to take that file from. So Microsoft Azure Backup, a great tool for our small remote offices or small offices. If we're doing a large office backup, a tool such as Data Protection Manager from System Center is a great tool to use for that. What we have here is we have a server that does server-to-server backup. So my one server with lots of local attached disk reaches out to all of my other servers and does the backups to this server locally. And so if I want to do restores, all that stuff is on my local disk, makes it very quick to do the restores. Now, I can do that and then take that and put it to tape and send that tape off-site if I wish. Another option is to update it to Microsoft Azure Storage. And so it will synchronize that up to Azure Storage. And then as I get Delta changes in, it will sync those Delta changes up. And then Azure Storage has a copy. That way, if something happens to my entire data center, let's say a fire happens and we lose everything, all the servers there as well as our backup server, we would basically set up, build a new backup server, tell it to pull all its data down from Azure Storage, and then that server would then go out and restore all the other servers in our brand new data center. So if we want to take more in-depth look at Data Protection Manager, I'll hand this over to Keith, and he can show us what DPM looks like.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Brian. That's a great introduction to some of the storage scenarios. So we're going to jump back over to the Azure portal and look at setting up first a Azure Backup Vault. So here I am on the Azure portal where we left off a little earlier on the storage page. In order to set up a backup vault that we can use for backing up to the cloud, we'll want to drill into a different page on the Azure portal. As I scroll down my left navigation area here, this blue bar over on the left, we'll see Recovery Services listed as another page. I'm going to click on that, and Recovery Services is where I'd go to set up a backup vault. Now, as Brian had mentioned, the backup vault that you build in Azure is a little different from a normal storage account because the backup vault has some added intelligence for being able to efficiently communicate with an on-premises backup agent either running on a Windows Server backup server or a System Center DPM server, for shuttling encrypted backup information back and forth from on-premises up to the cloud and back. So in order to create a new backup vault, I'm going to drill down into my new button, very similar to what we did for creating a new storage account, but now I'm going to select Recovery Services and Backup Vault. And on the Quick Create form, it'll ask me for two basic pieces of information. What name do I want to give my backup vault, and in which region do I want that backup vault to be located? So I'm going to key in a name here. So I'll key in a demo name for my backup vault and select one of my available Azure Data Center regions. Typically, I'd want to select a region that's probably a little further away from me so that I have some additional geographic protection for the backups that I'm storing in Azure. So if, for instance, my offices are located in the eastern U.S. region of the of America, and that's where all of my resources are provisioned in my on-premises data center, I'd probably get some additional protection by selecting West U.S. as the data center region for my backup vault, or I could select one of the other regions outside the U.S. as well. In my case, I'll go ahead and select East Asia for my backup vault and click on Create Vault. And you'll see that that's going to step through the process now of self-provisioning a new encrypted backup location. Now, while that's creating, let's talk about that encryption in a little more detail. The encryption that Azure Backup uses is actually encryption that you're in direct control of. When you install the backup agent locally on-premises, you define your own encryption keys, and those encryption keys stay in your on-premises network. They're never communicated. The keys themselves are never communicated out to the cloud for additional security protection. One of the first steps after creating a new backup vault is then to install the backup agent. So I'm going to drill into the properties while we're waiting for this new vault to get created. I'm going to drill into the properties of one of my existing backup vaults, and you'll see actually installing the agent is very easy. You simply click on the download agent link, select the appropriate agent for either Windows Server Backup or System Center DPM to install, download that to your backup server, and install it. That gives you a basic backup agent that you can then configure for communication with your backup vault. So let's go back here and see if our backup vault has created while we've been talking. You can see it has been created. So I've got my backup vault. It's active. It's in my location. Now, the second step that Brian had mentioned is that the communications between our on-premises backup servers and this backup vault in Windows Azure are protected by a certificate. We use certificate-based authentication to authenticate that secure backup connection, and then we encrypt the session between our on-premises backup server and the backup vault using SSL encryption as well. Well, the second step that we need to do then is generate a certificate that we then upload into our backup vault using the Manage Certificate button. Well, let's talk about generating that certificate. What I'm going to do is I'm going to switch over into my on-premises backup server. So this is a server that I've previously installed System Center Data Protection Manager on. And I have several options for creating a new certificate. In a production environment, I might create a certificate from my Enterprise Certificate Authority that's integrated with Active Directory. Active Directory Certificate Services is a built-in role that's included with Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2 to make it really easy to set up a large-scale enterprise deployment of a certificate authority. But in a lab environment, you could also use just a simple self-signed certificate. And in my demo, that's what I'll do. I'm just going to open up a command prompt. And inside my command prompt, I'm going to CD over to a directory where I've got my make cert tool in. And I'm going to just go ahead and run make cert. And let me just zoom that in a little bit here so you can see the full command. So make cert is a tool that we can use to create new self-signed certificates for lab testing purposes. It's included with several of the software development toolkits for Windows client and Windows server and whatnot. You can download it for free from the Microsoft Download Center just by downloading those SDKs and installing them. You'll find the Make Cert tool inside of them. So using my Make Cert tool, what I'm doing is I'm giving a certificate name, in my case, DPM Server Backup, and I'm also specifying other relevant information for the certificate purpose, listed as the object ID. You'll see that being that numeric number, 1.3.6.1, and so on, a length of my certificate keys, and an expiration date for my certificate. So I'm going to go ahead and run that particular command. It will create my new certificate, and it's actually going to save it based on my Azure certificate file as a .cer file. It'll also upload it into my local machine certificate store on my backup server. Well, now that I've got that backup .cer file created, I can upload that into my Azure portal. So if I switch back over to my Azure portal screen, let's go ahead and do that. We'll see that we can use our Manage Certificate button right at the Azure portal, browse out to that particular certificate file that we just created, and upload it. That'll give us a new certificate hash. Once we've got a common certificate on our backup server and in our backup vault on the Azure portal, then the next step is to configure our backup software to talk to this backup vault through the backup agent that we previously installed. So I'm just going to switch back over to my DPM server console. I'll go ahead and close my admin window. You'll see there's my DPM certificate that we previously generated. And I'm going to launch System Center DPM, my backup software. So I'll go ahead and launch that. I'll wait for that to launch. And on the DPM console then, I'm going to go down to my management area here. So let me just zoom in on that. The management area is the area that I'll use to define my connections to all of my backup locations. These could be disk-based backup locations, tape-based backup locations, or cloud-based backup locations. With DPM, you can choose how to leverage cloud as a component of your backup strategy. We have some customers that use exclusively cloud-based backups. We have other customers that use tape still as a component of their backup strategy, but more on an archival basis, perhaps on a weekly or monthly basis rather than a daily basis, and use cloud for all of their daily offsites, for instance. That way, while they may still have tape as a component of their backup strategy, they're not relying on as many tapes, managing all those daily tapes and whatnot as an ongoing practice. They're using tape more from an archiving standpoint. So I'm going to go ahead and click on management. And up on the on my management area, you'll see I've got my agents and my disks and tape libraries. And then right in the middle here, I've got online. Online is where I would go to configure my Azure backup vault. So when I click on online, up on the toolbar, I'll go ahead and click on register. Register allows me to register DPM with my Azure backup vault. And when I click on register, it's going to step me through a register server wizard. So the first thing that the register server wizard is going to ask me for is a certificate. So I'm going to go ahead and click on that browse button, browse out to the certificate that I previously generated and uploaded into my backup vault. So I'll click browse. There's my certificate. Click OK. And then it's going to connect out to my Azure backup, my Azure subscription, using that certificate, and enumerate my backup vault. So there's the backup vault that I previously created in my Azure subscription. I'm just going to go ahead and select that. You'll see it's in East Asia. It allows me to confirm my Azure subscription ID as well. And then I'll go ahead and click the next button. Now on the next button, I can specify if I have proxy servers or whatnot as part of my internet connection between my on-premises DPM server and my cloud-based backup vault. In my environment, I don't have any of that, so I'm just going to go with the default values, leaving all of that unchecked, and I'll click Next again. I also have the ability, as I'm setting up this connection to my backup vault, to register my agent with bandwidth throttling. So I'll go ahead and zoom in there so you can get a better view of my options. If I enable internet bandwidth usage throttling, I can specify different throttles, different maximum amounts of network bandwidth that I'm going to throttle my backups to the cloud on during work hours and non-work hours. And then I can even define what work hours means in my environment, the particular days of the week, and the particular times of each of those days as business work hours. So I'm going to leave my options at their default here. Just go ahead and click on the next button. The next screen asks me for recovery folder settings. So for my recovery folder, basically what this is a temporary location that as I'm pulling back data from the cloud, it's going to use whatever folder location I specify here as a temporary location to stage that data so that I can recover. I pull it back from the cloud, back to my DPM server, and then I actually push those recovered data files back to my original servers that I'm recovering that data to. So I'll just specify a local folder here. There we go, C:backups. The best practice would be to typically have a separate volume that you're using for this local staging area that's sized to the maximum amount of data that you might expect to recover from the cloud in one consistent operation. So I've got my recovery folder specified. I'll click Next again. It's going to ask me next on my encryption keys. Now remember, the encryption keys with DPM are stored, and any of our integrated Azure backup options are stored locally on premises. I can either use my own custom defined passphrase to generate my encryption keys, or I can have it generate a random passphrase just by clicking on the Generate Passphrase button. You'll see it generated and confirmed a random passphrase for me. Now it's important that this passphrase is kept in a protected manner locally, because if I lose this passphrase and forget it and I find that I have to reinstall my DPM servers without this passphrase, I won't be able to gain access to any of the encrypted data out on Azure. So what we typically recommend is copy this passphrase to your clipboard. We give you a convenient button for doing that, and then save that in a secure location, in a vault perhaps, that you're storing your other highly sensitive admin credentials inside for safekeeping. So there I've got. I've got all of my settings specified. I can go ahead and click the register button, and it's going to register my new Windows Azure backup location as a component of my backup strategy. Well, now that I've got that backup vault registered, well, I can go over to my normal areas under protection and be able to create a protection group for backing up to that cloud location. So if I go over here to my protection area, for instance, we'll see that I've got the ability now under protection to create a new, up on the toolbar, let me just go ahead and zoom in there, a new protection group for backing up disk to disk, and then having a cloud or a tape component of that backup strategy as well. So I'm going to click on the new button, create a new protection group, and just step through my wizard process of specifying first what it is that I wish to back up, whether it's servers or clients. In my case, I'll back up a server in my lab environment. I can drill down to select the particular data that I wish to back up. So I'll just drill into, just to keep things small for our lab environment, I'll drill into a particular folder. I've got some data sitting out on my desktop folder that I'll add as a protected item as part of my protection group. I'll click Next. I can give my protection group a name, so I'll go ahead and key in a name. Call it Azure Backups, and then specify my protection methods. So remember, DPM with Azure together gives us the ability to do disk-to-disk, disk-to-cloud, and disk-to-tape capabilities for our backup strategy. So we can involve all of those components as part of one protection group. In my case, I'm going to use short-term protection to disk on my DPM server, and then I'll also specify that I want to use the Azure Backup Vault as an additional level of offsite protection. I want to be able to use that for online protection to the cloud of what I'm backing up to disk. So I'll leave those options in place, click my next button. Now it's going to ask me about all of the parameters around my disk-to-disk backups. And this would be the same as what it would normally be if I was doing a normal on-premises disk-to-disk backup with DPM. So I can specify my retention range, the frequency at which I wish to back up my on-premises servers. I can set a period of time, for a schedule for doing file recovery points. I can specify, I can view and modify how much disk space I need on disk on my DPM server for handling these disk-to-disk backups and tell it to automatically grow the volumes as needed. I can specify how to handle the initial backup of my data. Do I want to do it automatically or manually? And I also have the ability to define my consistency check criteria for making sure that my backups are consistent. So all those options on the last few pages are all the normal options you'd find when you're just doing disk-to-disk backup with DPM. The next couple pages, though, are unique to backing up to the Azure Vault. So when I click on the next button, it's going to ask me, well, out of everything that I'm backing up to disk, what do I want to back up online to my Azure Backup Vault? So I can select all or just a portion of that data to also have that offsite backup to the cloud of. Well, I'll select our protected item that we added into our protection group earlier for backup to the cloud. And when I click the next button, it allows me to specify a different, unique retention period for how long I'm storing my data out in the cloud. So I can specify a retention in days of how long I want to retain that data out in the cloud. And I can specify a synchronization schedule of at what points in time during the day do I want to take the data that's been backed up on disk and synchronize that latest copy of my data backup out to the cloud as well for additional offsite protection. Once I've gone through the process of creating my file protection group, I'll just create the group and close out of it. You'll see it'll automatically, based on my settings, begin creating that replica of the items that I'm selected for backup. I can go down to my monitoring tab over on the side and get status on where each of those protected items are at. Have they backed up successfully or not? And I can even force a manual synchronization to the cloud. If I go back to my protection area, I can just right-click on any of my protected items and force to do and do a recovery point just as a manual process point in time outside of my normal scheduled activity. So I'll create a recovery point. I'll say that I want to create the recovery point for online cloud protection. Click OK, and it'll begin transferring the latest copy of that those items that were protected out to the cloud for safekeeping. When I'm ready to recover, I can use my normal recovery panel down at the bottom here and System Center Data Protection Manager to recover that data back. So hopefully that gave everyone a quick tour of Data Protection Manager and how it integrates with Azure Backup, the Azure Backup Vault as another offsite option for hybrid cloud backups.
That was great. That was a great overview of DPM. So one of the questions that came in while Keith was showing us that was, what about the security of that data? So certainly in DPM it's encrypted.
Yep.
But what about all the other data that we have in DPM? What are we doing with that? Say my hard drive fails and I've got all these unencrypted files in Azure. What do you do to ensure that I'm not going to be on 60 Minutes at some point in the future where they open up the drive and pull the data off and say, look what I found in the dump. What we're going to have is we have drive shredders. We don't send a drive out of our data centers without physically shredding the drive into small little chunks of metal. And so therefore, data loss is that worry is removed by using data shredding. So answer to that question is we data shred all drives.
So an additional level of protection, not only is the data encrypted, but if those drives are ever removed from the Azure data center, they're shredded physically before they're removed.
Yep. So on a review of what we've gone over with Azure Storage here, we have highly persistent storage, we have fast storage. This is a space that we are still investing heavily into in the storage area. So we do expect to see new things happen in storage. But right now, we do have highly durable, highly persistent data. By default, we're going to keep six copies of it, three at one site and three at another. And you saw how to provision your storage in the cloud and start to use that. You do want to have your storage where you're going to have your virtual machines running in the same site. We actually won't let it work where you can run a VM in the East US that's using storage in the West US. When you run a VM, the storage it uses is local, whether it's at any of the data centers around the world. And so that is how we do that. Is storage, we have the built-in storage backups, as well as you can just use a storage space and write your own PowerShell script or use some other agent to copy your data up into the cloud as well. So there are multiple ways to use that storage, and we do see a lot of customers who use our Azure storage for other things and come up with new ideas. So that is our storage today, and that is it for this section.
Great. So let's take another 10-minute break, and we'll be back to talk about virtual networks next.